Welcome to the Azure for Sports podcast, hosted by the Azure for Sports team at Microsoft.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Azure for Sports podcast. As always, I'm Suzanne Tedrick, and I am joined by my Azure partner in crime, Mr. John Flynn. How are you this time, John?
I am good, Suzanne. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. This is our first recording for 2023.
This is a new year, a new season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still writing 2022, but, you know, I'm eventually going to get there.
I still can't believe why we have to write checks in this day and age. It's 2023. I'm still writing 2022 on them as well.
I'm just saying, if I got a check, I wouldn't necessarily say no. I'm just...
I promise you, it's in the mail. What do you And I'm also super excited that we start the year again with Jake Switzer.
Hey, everybody. So I have to say, growing up, I thought that dealing with checks was going to be a bigger issue. Now, whenever I get a check, I'm like, what do I do with this? What do I do with this super paper? Just immediately start sweating, like the Jordan Peele meme.
I mean, you feel like, oh my God, like a little kid, like you get this $20 bill and like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And like, dude, it's not that much money. Like, relax.
Or as my kids say, how do I transfer this into Robux? Do I put it in the phone?
Right. Do I have an Apple Pay card thing? What do we do?
Exactly. Well, Jake, always awesome to have you with us. And we are joined today by a very special guest, Mr. Anthony Brock, who is the Senior Director of Business Analytics and Customer Insights. Did I get that right, Anthony?
You did. Yeah. Thank you.
Welcome.
Awesome. I am super excited. Anthony, thank you so much for being on and being our first guest of 2023. Very excited about today's conversation. And I thought, Jake, given that you're your guest hosting again, I'm gonna let you loose, man. This is your show. Go for it.
Sounds good. And for everybody out there listening or watching on YouTube, Anthony and I have been working together for the last few years since he started with the Pacers. So I thought that, you know, in honor of the Pacers' first time All-Star and the, you know, as of the recording of this podcast, the NBA's leading assist man, Tyrese Haliburton, thought I'd give you an easy question, easy assist to get things started. Could you tell us a bit about your role, what you do with the Pacers, and also how you use Azure?
Yeah, absolutely. So been here for about a year and a half now, so I know it feels like a few years because you and I worked very heavily in between data engineers. But yeah, I've been with the Pacers Sports Entertainment for about a year and a half, and it's been a great ride. I came from a more traditional, I'd say, analytics, you know, from a data perspective and a manufacturing industry. And so what's been interesting about sports is it's been interesting to understand like what actually the products that we can actually control, right? So we can't control the team or the players. And I can't go to Carlisle and say, hey coach, if we sign XYZ player, you know, we can expect revenue to increase by 35% over the next 3 to 5 years. He would just kick me out of his office, right? You know, it's been kind of a reorientation of like what the actual product is for me. And really what that is, it's the customer experience. And we can actually control that pretty well. And so we have a lot of what we do is focused on that. And a lot of energy and effort goes towards providing good customer experience because we do feel like revenue will follow that. And so that's kind of been my reorientation with sports. And it's been a really interesting ride over the last year and a half. For Azure, everything we've built is on the cloud now. I think we have one virtual machine that we use for the Ticketmaster O2BC connection, which you're very familiar with. But for the most part, we've built everything in either Azure Data Factory, and now we're migrating more towards the Azure Databricks environment and trying to put as much into the Data Lakehouse infrastructure as possible. And that also has been very interesting. And over the last year, we've made great strides in that environment for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. We've done some exciting things together. I just wanted to pick up, Anthony, on what you said, right? So we get a lot of questions for people who want to work in sports, who currently don't work in sports. They're like, you've got the coolest job ever. We're like, obvi, right? I mean, come on, look at what we do. How does that transition actually work when you had a career outside of sports, coming into it as a freshman going, all right, now what do I do? Instead of customers, I got fans, and fans are a lot more vocal and a lot more varied than I had before. How does that transition actually work, Anthony?
Yeah, it's not quick, that's for sure, right? So when I came in, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to do exactly what I did my last company, and we're going to forecast, and we're going to predict all these things. And it's not really a sensical business, right? It's you're really dependent on several factors, like winning, for instance, but and then several other things. So really just trying to understand what's actually important, and kind of understanding too, what got you here won't get you there, right? To the next iteration of what we're doing. And what I decided to really focus on is, you know, keeping the retaining top talent, right? Trying to keep the people as long as possible so we can actually move these projects forward as much as possible. But then also, what does the technology look like, and is it set up for success for us? And then just trying to understand how can we restructure what we're doing to make sure that we're actually, our output is actually helping the business from a revenue standpoint, and not depending solely on basketball to get us there.
I mean, there's just so many components that are just necessary for you to think about and consider. And I think during your opening, what I really loved hearing about was that intense focus on customer experience. And I think for people who are looking from the outside, they don't realize how much the customer experience is so key and so incredibly important for the sports industry, because it is all about the fans at the end of the day. And to borrow from John, it's never been a better time to be a fan. So just curious to hear your thoughts. How does data help you in shaping the customer experience for your organization?
Yeah, we do a lot of data collection, whether that's zero party, first party, you know, the data that customers are willing to give you, and then also just studying their behavior as well. So what we've really come around to is understanding, you know, what's looks like now and also look back, right? What's worked for us in the past. Let's survey our customers. Let's try to understand. Let's have focus groups. Let's try to solve the biggest issues that our customers might have, and then try to improve that customer experience. Because as I mentioned, I believe revenue will follow experience, right? And then I would say the tough part is predicting what fans might be into in the future, right? So we have done a lot of research to understand what the fan of the future might look like for our market. And that's kind of the more psychographic stuff that we're really interested in understanding more. But we do feel like we have research that could set us up for success for the next few years to get more of those future customers, future fans into our environment so that we can build that generational fanship like we have in the past, right? And so we've identified two main segments, right? The gambling fanatics and the digital hoopsters, we call them, and just all the information that goes into them. And there's certain demos that over-index with those things, but it's not always the case that those demos are going to identify those people. So we have to actually build out a matrix survey to understand those fans and type them out in the future. So a lot of research into that. We also have a lot of data on how they're behaving from a purchasing standpoint or just engaging with us via social or our native app. And so we take a lot of that data in, and we try to understand the customers and how could we improve that experience, not only from an in-person standpoint, but also from a digital standpoint too.
I mean, it sounds like you're talking about so many different touch points, and it sounds great, but dizzying at the same time. So I guess that my follow-up question to that is how do you gauge what's important to collect perhaps now, and then maybe not now, but for the future? How does the organization decide to approach all of these different points of data?
Yeah, because to your point, right, I can deliver a deck that has a lot of visuals and a lot of statistics that really probably won't register those things right away. It's more about putting it in business terms for them to help them understand, right? If we can say, if we increase retention over half season ticket holders by X percent at an average value of Y, we can expect a Z increase in revenue over the next 3 to 5 years from that ticket type. It's more of just like, you know, what's most important in business? Let's have the use cases drive what we're actually working on. In some cases, we may just come to the table and say, hey, we've been working on this. We'd like to, we do think it would make an impact in revenue, or we think it would make an impact in this customer experience pain point. Let's, can we try to implement this, or can we test it out, or can we focus group it? And really just getting a lot of buy-in from senior leadership too. We have a lot of support from the VPs and from senior leaders at president level as well to go out and research these things and bring stuff to the table and also be proactive with that. So really it comes down to good project management on our side, but also trying to understand those business use cases and what's really driving the business.
Interesting. So to kind of piggyback off of that conversation about understanding the fan and understanding how fans are interacting with or are viewing the game now and going forward, something that I've always been very curious about is the difference between big market and small market teams. So big market teams, you know, like here in New York with the Knicks and the Nets, they're competing with Broadway, with whatever new thing is happening in, throughout the city. The same in LA and other big market areas. For a team like the Pacers, who has a very passionate fan base. And I mean, if you watch any documentary like the 30 for 30 on Reggie Miller, it is fascinating to see just how much the Pacers fan base not only loves the Pacers, but loves the game of basketball. What are some of the key metrics that you all look at and try to really hone in on to, give the Pacers fan base a constantly evolving and better experience?
Yeah, if you listen to Bill Simmons' podcast, right, he even mentioned that we have the best arena for basketball, possibly. Oh, yeah. And to me, it's in the world, right? He said the NBA. And I totally agree, right? Our arena is built for basketball first, and then we still do like Disney on Ice, and we even had bull riding here last weekend, right? We have all kinds of interesting events and fun stuff there, but it's built for basketball first. And that does come from the culture here in Indiana and how important basketball is, right? Even Dr. Naismith, who invented basketball, said that it was born in Massachusetts, but it was made for Indiana, right?
Yep.
After coming to a state championship game in like 1925 or something. So it is interesting, right? We have to constantly be thinking about not only Pacers basketball, but we have Fever, we have the Mad Ants up in Fort Wayne, we have a 2K property, right, in esports. We have a lot of high school basketball here. We have a lot of college basketball here from all over the country, really. And really, we want basketball to be the most important thing. And when you come to this field house, and a lot of research goes into that as well, right? And you even hear our opponents say that it feels like the fans are like right on top of you. And then I would say the biggest thing about our market, to your point, like very loyal fans, right? We've done focus groups, we've done a lot of research, conjoint surveys, all types of stuff to understand our fans and what's most important to them. And when we talk to them, right, they want the team to be competitive. That's number one, right? But what we found is that our fans are actually pretty elastic to having a losing season or two, but still remain loyal to the team, right? And I do think that is maybe unique in our market. Indianapolis, I think it's like the 16th largest city in the U.S. So, and the from second to third is like millions of people. So I don't even think it's close, right? So when you think about our market, we do have to think about basketball first. We do have to put on a good experience where people just enjoy coming to watch or experience basketball in some way. And a lot of research goes towards that as well.
That's awesome. I want to dive into a little bit about what you said about the field house, right? Because you guys have put in a ton of investment recently, so building out capabilities. Can you talk a little bit about how data and your role played in actually redesigning the experience for the fan who's in the field house at that moment? How does that come about, Anthony?
Yeah, so second largest renovation in NBA history, $360 million. It's inside and outside, right? So, I mean, it's even the, brand new seats. There's three new premium club spaces. There's other premium spaces. There's a sky deck. There's all types of new, interesting ways to enjoy the game. And on the outside, we're going to have, it'll be done by the All-Star in 2024, but we're going to have a pavilion where you can actually enjoy basketball out there. It's like kind of an outdoor park area. And you can also, we're going to have ice skating in the winter, right? So it's going to be like a really nice entertainment space all in all. But that was started before me, so I can't take a lot of credit in the research for that. But I did talk to our COO and president about that and how, the research they did to understand how to build a basketball forward arena in the state of Indiana, but be very modern and tech forward. And a lot of research went into it. They visited other stadiums, including across different leagues, right? NHL, NBA, NFL. They did a lot of focus groups for multi-game buyers, single-game buyers, season ticket holders, all those things. They really wanted to know best practices on the newest stadiums and arenas and try to understand how can we bring that to Indiana in our own way, right? There's a lot of tradition at what's now called Gainbridge Fieldhouse, a lot of tradition there. It's about 23 years old. but it looks brand new on the inside now, right? And it's a beloved building. There's been a lot of good history there, right? We had when we were in the finals against the Lakers in 2000, it was through Gainbridge Fieldhouse. It was Conseco Fieldhouse at the time, right? But a lot of research and a lot of data collection went into it, especially visiting those other arenas and field houses around the country to understand how can we bring the most modern data and technology to an arena like ours is kind of a timeless traditional type field house.
That's awesome, man. I think so. I speak to my family about my job and my friends about what I do. And they're like, they have absolutely no idea that this amount of research and amount of data goes into choosing what a venue looks like. They're saying, well, build it, they will come, right? I mean, obviously, yeah. We'll come because we're Pacers fans, we'll be there. Well, that's not the point, right? That's part of it. Mm-hmm. But as you said, there's history in an existing, in an established building. But then there's also this new stuff that you're building around it, because no matter how big stadiums get, and look at some of the World Cup stadiums from English Premier League, et cetera, as well, is that they get massive compared to some of the seats that we have here, but they're still finite. And your market is so much bigger than the amount of tickets that you have for sale that can come and someone can put their butt in a seat and watch what the action is happening live. Mm-hmm. How do you marry the responsibility to give that great experience to someone who's bought a ticket and they're in the venue right now, they're in the field house, it's fantastic, it feels like you're on top of it. But what about those who are in out of market, they can't get there, or even out of the country, but still want that Pacers experience? How do you marry delivering both of those?
Yeah, it actually is. At the league meetings a few weeks ago, we learned that about 1% of your fans will actually come to a game, right? If you think about that, if you're not marketing to that 99% digitally or in some way, then you could lose those fans in the future, right? So we do have to really be conscious on how we are reaching our fans, right? We've made a lot of, I'm not going to take credit for the advances in social media we've made, but our team has made a lot of advances in social media. I think we're like fourth in the league now in engagement. It's been really cool to see that kind of blow up. And it's also great to have an exciting team to build that up around, right? Sure. But we do try to engage our fans as much as possible, right? And if you think about basketball, it's become such an international sport now. You have to be able to market to everyone. If you look at our players, right, we have, I think, 5 or 6 international players, so about half the team. And we have to be able to market to those countries in a way that makes them feel inclusive as well. Some of the Spanish-speaking countries and some of them not. But at the end of the day, we want to be able to reach as many fans as possible and make sure that when they do engage with the Pacers, it's always a great experience. And so we have streaming through Bally Plus. We're always on NBA League Pass. We have different ways to reach those fans. But we also have a fair amount of fans who shop through our e-commerce platform for gear. And being able to serve those fans across the country and possibly globally is something that we're also focused on too.
I think it blows my mind that, like, the fact that you would think that, you know, there would be so many more people coming and attending games, and it's like it's only this small fraction, this small percentage, and that you have to think a little bit more bigger globally as to the audience that you're serving. So great reminders that it's not just all about you physically being present. It's really about being where your fans are, wherever they may happen to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thinking about the design of the field house for your sustainability practices, because you know that for many organizations now, there is this very keen awareness and focus on making sustainable event spaces and products and services. How much was that a factor in the design of the field house?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when I talk to Mel Raines about this, it's interesting to think about a basketball arena, right, and how we can start to save energy when it's so massive, right? And so, 17,000-18,000 seats, when you think about that, what's interesting when I did talk to her, when we did this whole renovation, right, almost everything was replaced, right? So much more energy efficient. Like if you think about like when you buy a new house and you get new wind or you get new windows, right? Much more energy efficient, actually brings down your bill quite a bit. We have much more energy efficient processes throughout the entire building now, which is great. And one of the cool things that, you know, she mentioned is we actually recycled every single seat. So sometimes you could, you know, if you have a renovation or a stadium gets torn down, you can kind of sell those seats off or auction them off for like memories and stuff like that. But we actually recycled all of them. So it was like 18,000 seats that we recycled, which is a lot of material when you actually think about it.
Wow, yeah.
The hard part though is it's not like, it's kind of a nonsensical business when you think about for PBR. So we had the professional bull riding here last weekend. When you think about how long we had to keep the doors open to bring in all that dirt and stuff like that, it's hard to actually be sustainable from at every single point of the business. But from a broad standpoint, it's much more energy efficient, which is just great for the environment as well. And then, so that's really kind of the focus of sustainability for us at the moment.
I'm happy that you said, and thanks for bringing that up, Suzanne, right? Because we do see sustainability going from, oh yeah, we do that. We have LED bulbs, right? Mm-hmm. To now being something real and something tangible, right? And I think it's important because I think, and I love you said this earlier, right? You said that revenue will follow experience, right? But revenue will also follow the choices that you make, right? And the responsibility and the responsible choices that you make as well. We were talking to an organization that is an owner operator of multiple live venues, multiple multi-use live venues. And they were saying that fans have now turned the corner, even though you may be a rabid fan of Dolly Parton, for example, but if she's coming into a venue where they use single-use plastics, they won't go, right? So how much of that also factors in? I mean, look, Dolly Parton, I think everyone will go to that. We were talking earlier how we're all huge fans, so we're all going to Dollywood as a live show for this next, right? But how much of that sort of real tangible, we don't use single-use plastics, we do, we are water positive, we are waste neutral, how much of that actually factors into the designs when you're putting that fan experience in place?
Yeah, I think, you know, I knew Dolly Parton was going to get brought up, by the way. I knew it. Just talking pre-show with you guys, I knew it would be brought up. You know, I think we all came to the conclusion we like Dolly Parton.
Yes.
You know, when you think about stuff like that, like, it, again, I come back to more energy efficient things, like even in the bathrooms, you know, having the energy efficient dryers. It's stuff like that. The small stuff does add up, right? To your point, like the single use straws and all that.
Yeah,
the small stuff does add up. And I don't think like our market is like, we're not going to come to something because you guys aren't sustainable with like the tiniest little thing. I do think that to your point, like fans want to know that we care about the community. We have a lot of outreach. We have a lot of care in what we're doing. And we're actually being very responsible when we operate a building of this size. Right. So we do, you know, we try to help out as much as possible with those things. We also do have a philanthropic arm and a foundation and community engagement that does help out more with, I would say, the Indianapolis community going forward.
Cool. So I want to pivot just a little bit away from, you know, the fun conversations that we've had so far and get into kind of some of the nerdier stuff. So we, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Anthony and I have been working together since he's joined the Pacers organization, and we've worked on a few different areas within their tech stack. And a big piece of it over the last year and a half has been moving away from a traditional data warehouse type approach and using the lakehouse style, where data, instead of it being stored in a traditional database or data warehouse technology, they're using a data lake to store data as Parquet Delta files that are easily queryable, can be formatted in a way that can be surfaced to reports. So wanted to get your take on the shift towards the lakehouse style architecture. What are some of the benefits? What were some of the hurdles maybe? And you know, what is keeping you all on that road?
Yeah, I mean, the benefits, you know, let's look from a cost perspective, right? It's been, we were operating at about 50% of cost that we were about a year ago with about 41 times more active data storage. So we're much more efficient now, right? I would say in our focus on data infrastructure. And by the time we're done with this migration, which I would say we're about maybe two thirds, maybe three fourths of the way there, we're going to be able to operate at about 10% of what we were doing before from a cost perspective. And so that kind of stuff is great, right? But once the data is in, I also want to make it very accessible and very usable. And that's where I'd say the biggest benefit is going to be realized, is when we are bringing all data silos together into one place and being able to use that data to enhance the customer experience even more, right? If we can say Jake is purchasing from the team store online, he's also coming to two or three games, and he donated to the Pacers Foundation, we should find a way to create a wild moment for him or bring him in and experience something a little different because he has been such a loyal fan through multiple properties or multiple revenue streams for us, right? So we are really focused on leveraging that data as much as possible in the future. I would say we've mostly been operationalizing it, right? Integrating more into Salesforce so that we can actually use that data. Sales reps can use that data to also enhance the fan experience. But I would say it's going to be a game changer for us as we continue to develop that. But from a cost perspective, that was kind of the immediate gains that were realized.
Now, that's fantastic. I mean, being able to talk to how making this shift will help you to be more cost efficient. And I guess to follow up on that a little bit, what were some of the drivers internally to make this kind of change? Because as I'm sure you're aware, Jake's aware, John's aware, making these types of technology decisions should definitely not be done on a whim and definitely not because, oh, I saw it on CIO.com. I'm going to go ahead and do it. So, you know, would you mind sharing with us a little bit about some of those internal drivers that made this decision possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I will go ahead and say it all starts with hiring the right people, right? So we hired a new data engineer and it's kind of his brainchild, right? He sold me on it in a matter of a few meetings and really me created kind of a super fan of what he's actually doing right within Azure Databricks. And so we've really come together and he's been very communicative about what we're doing, how we can do it. We were maybe a little aggressive on the timeline, right? We were maybe like, hey, let's get this done in like 8 months, but it's going to take longer than that for us. Just mostly because of the different various API sources that we have are just some are complex, some are just maybe not well documented, right? So that's kind of been the only really big, I would say, struggle. But internally, you know, we have a lot of buy-in from our senior leadership team when we proposed this idea. We kind of presented the facts. We said, this is what we can do. This is where we want to go. And during budget time and really that set off the, okay, let's go for it. Let's do it. And so again, Jared, our data engineer, he's been working very hard in this over the last year or so. And again, already gains realized from this, but I do think the biggest benefit will actually be the data that we use in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to dial in on something that you said, because I know that Pacer's leadership from a technology and leadership perspective have always been innovation forward. Right. You guys have always wanted to be where the technology can help the fan, where it can help the game and so on and so forth. How does that conversation look, though, Anthony, when you're going, all right, this is wild. This is new. I think it could be really cool. You got sold on it. How does that work from going to then maybe seeking budget to get it done or seeking the permissions to change from where you are today? Something that works, right? It may not be the most efficient thing, but it works, right? We're running a team. To where you want to get to. How does that conversation look?
Yeah, it's putting it in a business perspective that they can understand because, you know, kind of what we talked about earlier, I can't just create a 10 deck slide, you know, deck and say, hey, here's everything we can do. And here's the statistics on what we can do. And here's the analysis. And then all that, it's more about, hey, it's going to save us money, right? We can actually right off the gate, start saving some costs to our cloud platforms, which in the end will just benefit us even further. Even as we maybe onboard more ML AI capabilities, we'll be able to actually maybe fill that gap with those costs instead of actually incrementally increasing. So, you know, there's that kind of like business perspective from it, but there's also the or cost perspective. There's also the, hey, this is what we want to do with our data, right? We want to, it's going to come in unstructured. We got to structure it up. We got to make sure it's readable. But once it's there, we want to democratize data within the entire organization, right? And that's really the goal of this whole thing is to turn everyone into an analyst of some sort, right? Being able to access data, use it, make decisions from it, start every conversation or major decision from the data that we're providing. And that's really what kind of, I would say, sold them on, okay, let's go for it. And also, do we need to change out providers or anything like that? And the quick answer there was no, right? We could do everything within the Azure environment. And which was really beneficial, especially since our CTO and VP of IT at the time, they really don't want to move off stuff, especially when they have things built out. So we were able to just kind of leverage what we're already in and say, hey, we're not making a big platform change. There's no new contracts, right? There's nothing major here. We're just doing something different within the environment that we already have.
So that's the thing that really strikes me there is that it isn't that different. as you were saying, right, we don't, the shift isn't that massive in terms of the practicality of it. I think it's a lot of it is a mind shift, and a lot of it is thinking differently about how you get to the end point as you do today. It's also crazy, right? So some people that we speak to, they go, well, we have all of these different departments. They have their own data. A lot of it's duplicative. A lot of it comes in through the same sources, but we have multiple ways of doing it. And then you kind of go, why? Right? I mean, it's 2023, right? Despite that we keep writing 2022 on our checks, it is 2023. Why do you think we still have this old guard way of thinking, well, this data is mine and I have my fiefdom and I have to protect it. Therefore, therein lies my value. That's clearly eroding, right? But why do you think that still permeates today?
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe they've had experienced maybe some data practitioners or other departments that have maybe used that data to tell a different story. And one thing we've really concentrated on is if we're going to present, you know, revenue data, for instance, right? The VP of sales should, or someone or a director in sales or the AVP in sales should have some kind of buy-in to that either presentation or document that we're creating, right? We can't just like blow up sales and say, hey, you know, revenue is this, and here's why, right? We have to actually maybe get some context from them and understand like, hey, revenue is down maybe on this ticket type this season because XYZ, right? And so I would say it's really helped us really actually bring people into our process and not just maybe silo it ourselves once we get all the data and work on something. It's, hey, let's take this to the VP of sales or VP of marketing and see what they think and help them give context to what we're finding. And also there's probably a different filter that we're not thinking of, because as Jake knows, Ticketmaster data is it comes in like really, there's so many fields, right? And there's so many different ways to break it down. And so we really need a lot of context when we're trying to build out this ticket revenue and analytics and things like that.
The fact that you're able to realize so many early successes and gain so much out of it, I'm curious, where does it go from here? Where else are you looking to kind of innovate and perhaps make more strides towards some of the goals that you talked about earlier?
Yeah, I would say kind of the next steps for us is, you know, once everything actually is in the Lakehouse, right? Let's create these use cases that we can actually tackle. And, you know, a lot of them are going to be more on the predictive side. So we'll be leveraging things like Databricks ML and Azure ML and all those platforms that we can to understand not only, you know, what kind of type of fans we want to attract, but also what is their behavior like and how can we influence that over the next several years. And then, you know, another piece of it is we want to be able to track the customer experience even better and build out, you know, platforms or maybe even like a command center type deal where people can actually view live analytics so that we understand not just what happened in the past, but what's happening right now within our current either digital or in-person environment for the game.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the pieces of technology that you had talked about earlier, it's not just a first-party service on Azure, but also a partner of ours that, you know, these are the folks that built out really the premier distributed computing platform that's out right now in Spark. But Azure Databricks, you had mentioned it, and it comes up quite a lot in not only, you know, the podcast that at least that I've been able to do with John and Suzanne, but also in every customer scenario that I've worked on. So wanted to ask you, you know, with Databricks, and I know Jared has come in with extensive experience, so shout out to Jared for really taking advantage of it for all of your use cases. But with Databricks, what have been some of the things that you've seen, you know, it's been able to allow you all to do things in ways that you hadn't thought you could do it before, or things that previously had been really hard, but now really easily, kind of delve into that just a little bit.
Yeah, I would say, especially, you know, Jared's main focus right now is mostly in the API ingestion. And that's been something that for us, we've had several different types of data, you know, data sources come in where we've had the FTP drops. You and I have built out a few things with FTP. We've built out a lot in Data Factory for just creating tables and then duplicating that table and then pushing it through and a lot more, right? So there's a lot of different ways you can pull that in. And I would say The focus on the APIs, I would say, has really helped us to build out much more and bring that data in, maybe unstructured at first, but then transforming that to usable data. So Jared's been really great about helping us understand that. Ticketmaster, for instance, just launched their new kind of API, I think, a year or two ago. We've had the traditional ODBC connection, which is a live look into their production database. However, we're looking to do the API instead, maybe in the Lakehouse, which again is a tribute to, or you know, which yeah, is a tribute to trying to understand the best way to bring data in. And I would say Databricks has been a catalyst for helping us understand what is the best way. How can we start to bring that stuff in more efficiently at a lower cost, but also store it in a way that makes sense, and then be able to extract that whenever we need to, kind of either run a live dashboard or just run analysis.
Anthony, what does it look like on a day-to-day operational viewpoint of now you've moved to this new architecture and you're almost done, right? You've got a couple left to go to finish your migration here. But how does your day-to-day change in terms of maintaining and the time it takes to support this new architecture that you have?
Yeah, well, we're actually hoping to bring in another position to help out with that as well. But I would say, from the engineering standpoint, right? If I'm going to speak for Jared for a minute, he does optimize the different data sources he's already pulled in. He's even said, hey, the way I did this, 3 months ago is actually not as well as I could have done. So I'm going to re-optimize that. And he's constantly trying to optimize those things, especially as we wait for those other sources to kind of pass through the legal realm of things so that we can actually bring them in. So I would say from the engineering standpoint, it's optimizing it. It's constantly trying to rebuild those pipelines to be more efficient. As we bring in an analytics engineer, hopefully this fiscal year, we'll be able to even more concentrate on the transformation of data, which is kind of the biggest, I would say, bottleneck right now. And then from the analytics standpoint, right? So, for myself and for the analytics team, we're able to actually pull that data extremely quickly in the cloud and actually push that into either Tableau, push it into machine learning, or just export it. And, I have to build a lot of presentations sometimes. So just putting it in a deck, right? So I would say we're much more leveraged in actually extracting that data much quicker on the analytics side as well. And then we are going to, we have a lot of integrations from the warehouse to Salesforce right now. We'll be duplicating that in the Lakehouse as well. So being able to push even more data that we have in the Lakehouse from various different data sources into Salesforce for analysis in there, as well as rep usage to try to sell more or better products to a...
That's awesome.
I think we have time for just one more question. And I want to use it to give you a moment to promote yourself for what is coming up in the city of Indianapolis with the All-Star Game heading to the city next year. So I know that you recently announced that you were going to be on the All-Star Game committee. Wanted to hear, what all goes into that? What all do y'all have planned? Or what are some thoughts that you're tinkering around with for the game? As, very excitedly, just like you said earlier, Dr. Naismith had said that the game of basketball was made for Indiana. And we've all seen Hoosiers. We know how big the game is in the state. So very exciting to see the All-Star Game head to Indianapolis. So just want to get your thoughts on, what are some things that you want to see or you want to get out of being on the committee?
Yeah, it's interesting, too. Like the best part, I would say, from COVID, if we're looking at a positive from that, we were supposed to host it in 2021. And we, because of COVID, it got pushed to 2024. So we're able to do this massive renovation in between there, which has really set us up nicely to host it. And, we had the commissioner actually in town in December checking everything out. He was, his eyes were lighting up on how amazing the new building is. So I do think it's going to be really cool for Indianapolis. We had the Super Bowl here, maybe 10 years ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago. I can't remember now. It was incredible. The economic impact that it had on the city of Indianapolis and really Indiana as a whole was just incredible. And new hotels being built, new buildings, and all this amazing stuff, right, for Indiana and Indianapolis. And so kind of my role on the NBA All-Star Committee for Indianapolis in 2024 is going to be really concentrated on helping with an outside vendor measure the economic impact of hosting it in Indianapolis. And so I'm really excited to dive in deep on that. And again, I think everyone's going to be kind of blown away. I hope we get the same weather we had in the Super Bowl this year, because it was like a freak week in February where it was like 65 degrees and everyone's like, man, Indiana is really nice. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to like be 10 degrees next week. So I don't know. Hopefully we get that type of weather. But otherwise, I do think it's going to be a great chance for Indianapolis and Indiana as a whole. what's really cool too about the committee, as I'll say real quick, is they've done a lot more to just not only help, you know, the building and the NBA and the Pacers and all that, but actually the community has really benefited from this. We've had like 24 projects for All-Star 24 that have benefited things involving basketball, non-involving basketball, just outside the community. And the committee itself is so vast and large with community leaders and leaders here at Pacers Sports Entertainment. So it is really cool opportunity for us to kind of get the community involved and actually help out with them as well.
That's awesome. I do think, I mean, we hear this now, it's always bigger than just the game, right? No matter if it's basketball, the women's basketball, or your different leagues. But one of the things that I commend you and your organization for is, yes, you're fan first and you're fan forward when you plan your game of basketball and your seasons of basketball, but you're also very community first. Right? The fact that you give back, you're philanthropic, or however you say that word, philanthropic, whatever, that arm of the organization as well does so much good. And it isn't just an all-star as well. I think it's worth mentioning that you guys are perpetually giving back to the community which you serve as well. So I wanted to give you guys a shout out for that, because what you do is tremendous. So well done. Good job.
Awesome. Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree.
Oh, that's amazing, being able to give back to the community. And you're so right, John, about just it being more than the game. My husband is a huge college football fan, and just the level of intensity that goes behind it. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, it's a male soap opera. Just know that. and there is certainly true with it. But it's great that it's building the community. Congratulations. It's going to be wonderful. I am keeping the fingers crossed that the weather holds up. Awesome. Well, with that, we are officially at the end of our time for this episode. Anthony, thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure having you. And Jake, as always, thank you so much for joining us on our episode. John, so we're wrapping this up, but everyone, thank you so much for your time. If you had any suggestions for future episodes or content, by all means, please let us know. We want to make sure that you're loving the episodes for 2023 and beyond. Until next time, take care, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.